Fred L. from Long Beach.
My name is Fred Lozano. I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. Being the alcoholic I am, I was already visioning myself hitting my head on this, bending down and getting the water. I was telling our 10-minute speaker, thank you, that I just got a Camry. And I opened up the trunk, and it comes down a little bit. Well, when it comes down a little bit, I'm in the trunk doing something, and I get up, and I have a big bump on the back of my head already. And I keep doing it over and over and over again. But you know what? It's worth it. You should have saw what I was driving before that. So I want to thank Damien for asking me to come down here and do this. Years ago, I was... Oh, and I want to thank Trinette. We've been friends for 26, 27 years, one day at a time. And if you don't have a friend like her, get one. Thank you. And what was your name? Chad. Chad drove me down here, and we're very good friends, too. And no, I'm serious. He's one of the men friends that I could talk to and tell anything to, and vice versa. It's just a gift to have a friend like that. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm not a blabbermouth to all you men. You know, I'm still a badass macho guy, you know. And, or at least I think I am sometimes, but thanks, Chad, for driving me down here. I came down here about, not to this meeting, but out this way, is about 15 years ago. My dad just passed away, and I was living with my mom. My mom's full-blooded Indian lady and an Al-Anon. And I was living at home. I moved in after my dad died. Well, before that, I moved in. And the guy I was sponsoring backed out at the last minute. And my mom goes, what's the matter? I said, oh, I'm going to have to go up to San Diego by myself. She goes, I'll go with you. Are you embarrassed? And I said, no, heck no, I'm not embarrassed. So I brought my mom down here. And if it wasn't for my mom, I would have stopped and went to the baseball game and called up and said, I can't make it. And today, too, our team over there is playing your team here. I didn't want to mention that I'm a Raider and Dodger fan because it would get a lot of you guys pissed off. So, but that's an outside issue, so I won't mention it. It's all fun. We have a group of guys that drive in from San Diego at our home group, and we talk trash before the meeting every Monday night, and it's fun to do that, you know. So, anyways, I was born in Compton, and I have a 2 older sisters and an older brother, and my mom took 7 years off and had me and twin sisters, and my mom's full-blooded Indian Sioux lady, and my dad's Mexican. And at the age of 5 or 6, we did a geographic from Compton, California, to Santa Fe Springs, and that's by Whittier, Norwalk area. And so I grew up playing with black kids, and at the time there was a lot of black kids there. And my brother terrorized me. He was 7 years older than me. When we moved back home, he told me that there was no black kids here to play with. And I said, so what? He goes, yeah, but you're black. And, you know, and I didn't really look in the mirror. I didn't really know what black was, you know. And being young at 5 years old, I believed everything he told me. He goes, if you don't believe me, ask mom what color the rest of the babies were when you were born. And I was born in Compton. And I went, mom, what color were the babies when I was born in Compton? They were black. And I thought, damn it, I'm black. There was nothing wrong. I just didn't know. I didn't know black, white. At 5 years old, you don't know that stuff. And thank God she asked me why. And I told her, and she goes, no, don't believe your brother. He's bad. And he just terrorized me, told me there was no Santa Claus and stuff like that. And he even told me I was found in back of a market. And I really believe that, you know, because being the kid I was growing up, I always myself felt out of place, you know, having 4 sisters and an older brother, and my mom and my dad was an alcoholic, and my mom was a non-treated Al-Anon. She was always on my dad's ass. I couldn't, you know, when I look back, I noticed it, but I didn't really know then, but they were always arguing, and my dad was always coming home drunk, and my dad kind of tapered off a little bit. when I was younger, and he was my little league coach from age 8 to age 12, and with a ball of whiskey in his back pocket, and he was a damn good little league coach, and terrorized me, man, just totally terrorized me, and it was fun. And here my brother grew up resentful looking back, thinking that my dad loved me more than they loved him, you know, and he always grew up like that. And I was thinking the other way, you know, growing up like that, and my four sisters were crazy, and they're still crazy today, but I love them a lot, and they're my sisters, you know, and I could barely remember back. I have an Aunt Rosie. It's my mom's sister. She's sober today, 48 years. She was the first one that went to Alcoholics Anonymous 48 years ago, and she's in a convalescent home, and she has Alzheimer's disease, and I want to tell you a little story real quick. My sisters are kind of crazy. One used to go to Al-Anon and doesn't. And my Aunt Rosie's a hardcore barefooted alcoholic. And she pretends, to me she does, that she doesn't remember them visiting. But when we go there, we have meetings. And we sit down and we talk about alcoholism. We talk about the steps. She shares stuff with me. One drunk talking to another. And my sisters are going, how come she doesn't talk like that to us? I guess she probably doesn't like you. She's not that dumb. She's 48 years sober, a full-blooded Indian lady, you know. And she was the first one that got sober in our family, and everybody drank. It was a big, drinking, happy family, both sides of the family. And obviously, my mom's side, there's Indian people that drank, and it was crazy when they got drunk. And I really bought it for a while there for me that I was Indian. So that's why I do crazy things when I don't drink and when I drink. Maybe I'm Indian inside of me, and that wasn't the case. But my Aunt Rosie was a real fun drunk. She would get drunk, and she would do crazy things. We had birthday parties for the little kids, and my Aunt Rosie would be drunk, and we'd sing happy birthday, and she would go, okay, now you got to smell the cake. So my nephews or my sisters or somebody would go down like this to smell the cake. And my Aunt Rosie would, whoa, push her face in there. And they would be crying. And my Aunt Rosie would be drunk. And my dad would be drinking with her and laughing and joking. I thought it was funny because it wasn't my face, you know. And then I heard she was gone for a while. And she stopped drinking. And I heard she stopped drinking. And I thought, man, she's going to probably turn into a nun or something. You know, she's not going to be the same and stuff. And, you know, she came back and she was the same person. She just wasn't drinking. And she wasn't hanging out with my dad anymore either because he was still drinking. And I'll tell you what she did. There was a birthday party about 2 years later. And we all sang happy birthday. And my Aunt Rosie's 2 years sober. And she goes, okay, now you got to smell the cake. And she did it again, but she did it sober. She wasn't drinking, and she wasn't a nun, and she was being the same Aunt Rosie. I don't know about you, but I got a little bit of that, and I put it in my back pocket. And I thought, wow, she's not drinking, she's still Aunt Rosie. You know, that whatever she's doing, it's pretty cool, you know. And but my dad kept on drinking and stuff, and I grew up in a neighborhood in Santa Fe Springs where it was a very, very violent gang neighborhood, and today they're into drugs. I don't even go over there at nighttime anymore. And but they would kill the ice cream man, and they would do all kinds of crazy stuff there. And we were able to walk to the park and walk back as a 8-year-old, 10-year-old kid. Now you can't do that, not because of the gangs. You just can't do that with your kids anymore. You can't leave them alone. You know, other stuff happens. And but I was, like I said, I was in that big family, and I was the last one to come home because I was playing baseball or boxing or doing something, and before I started drinking, I was having fun with my friends and doing stuff, usually it was sports and baseball or something like that. And then I got older, and I started hanging out with this family across the street, the Chavez family, and I grew up Catholic, so if you guys are Catholic, don't get offended what I'm going to say. They were Catholic, and I was told not to hang out with them because they went to Catholic school. And yet I went to Catholic church. But they were bad kids because they went to Catholic school, and they did a lot of bad things. There was Bobby Cycle, and there was Reuben. And Bobby Cycle used to get cats and swing them around and throw them against the fence. And we would knock the shit out of him for doing that. I mean, that was bad. And he was Bobby Psycho. The one thing he did, he got me and his brother Reuben up on the roof. And we all had umbrellas when we were younger. And Bobby Psycho was so psycho that guess what happened? He was the first one to jump. You know, you would think he would be smart enough to tell us to jump off with umbrella. He's so stupid, he jumped off. And he broke his ankle. Ah, started screaming. Do you think we jumped off? Nah. We got off and got the ladder and we called and said, hey, Bobby jumped off with an umbrella. And it just broke and it went down, you know. But we were going to do that too, you know. I wasn't supposed to hang out with him, you know, and I did. The first time I got high, it was sniffing paint. And I don't know if you ever sniff paint. It gets you down fast, downtown, real fast. The only bad thing is that you black out for about a half hour and you're gone. You're out to lunch, you know. I would come home, and I was always been a good liar all the way to getting sober. I would come home, and I had a bike by then. I was 10, 12 years old, and I would have gold paint, Kmart gold, and 39 cents at the time, big can. And it would be gold paint on my T-shirt, and my mom would go. She didn't know one sock was missing because I would take a sock off and spray it and go like that. And she would go, what's wrong with your shirt? I don't know. And I would look down. There's all kinds of gold paint on there. I said, we just painted Bobby's bike and it was gold. Oh, okay, be careful next time. You just ruined that shirt. And I was always a good liar. And I thought I was till I got older and they told me when we looked back and talked about it that they kind of believed me, but they didn't believe me. You know, I mean, come on. Anyways, I started doing that, and luckily, I was enthused about being in sports. I'm a baseball freak. I love baseball, even today. I could watch, we were going to be late because we're watching Major League Baseball Network, all the games and stuff like that. We're sitting down going like this. Come on, let's go. Let's get out of here. Let's go to the meeting. Anyways, I grew up like that, and my dad being the Little League coach, so in high school, my dad got sober when I was 16 years old, and when I was a freshman in high school, I had to work to get an ASB card, to get cleats, to get a mouthpiece, to get a physical, to do all that stuff, and I started growing up resentful. My mom hooked me up to this lady that had a Mexican delicatessen down the street, and in between school, I would go to this Mexican delicatessen, and they would sell corn tortillas. I would pick up 90-pound bags of corn, put it into this tub, heat it up, and cook it, and stir it around and stuff. I was doing all that stuff. Her husband, the owner of the place, was a dead alcoholic drunk. I mean, he was bad. He had just his, you could tell. I mean, and he would tell me before I would go home, the health department's coming, so can you clean up the floor? The health department don't come every day. And I would clean the floor every day and stuff and mop it and clean it. I was running that whole place at the same time going to baseball practice or football practice. And I was growing up really resentful. But the only good thing about that job, at lunchtime she would say, what would you like to eat? And I could have anything in that Mexican delicatessen to eat, and she would cook it for me. It was called Garcia's. I gained weight a lot real fast, man. I'll tell you that. It was some good Mexican food, man. I haven't found a place like that in a long time. And I ended up going through high school like that, and my dad got sober, and it was going at AA meetings. The last time I played football, I was a junior. And my mom was scared that I was going to get hurt. She was scared to death. And when I was younger, I always was a big kid, and I started lifting weights with older guys. And I was lifting weights so much that my mom got kind of mad because I wasn't eating the regular foods that they eat. I started wanting to eat different foods because they told me to. I'm only 14, 15 years old, and I'm lifting weights really heavy. And my mom comes and tells me, you know what? The more weights you lift, the smaller your brain gets. And you know what? I've always been a kid to believe you. I have no idea why. But I tell you what, even up to my mom not being here anymore, I believed her 110%, whatever she told me. And you know what? I thought to myself, my brain isn't that big right now, so I better stop lifting weights, man. Because, you know, come on. I mean, I hated to study. I had the ability to get A's, but I didn't. I went by with C's and D's and stuff. And, I did stop lifting that much weights. But I ended up playing a football. I only played my sophomore and my junior year because our 10-minute speaker talked about fear. And I'm a big boy. And when I was younger, you wouldn't want to mess with me. I was that big. And yet I was scared of you. You know, and a friend of mine, we had a football team in my neighborhood, and we're all Mexican, and we were called the Chicano Bears, not Chicago. I spoke at a meeting, and I swear I said this, Chicano Bears, and there was a guy that comes and goes, you know what, you weren't on the Bears, and he didn't understand me what I said. I didn't say Chicago Bears, I said Chicano Bears. It was a nickname of a neighborhood, and we're all Mexican. We would play car clubs, other neighborhoods for money and beer. And I'm only 14 years old, and I'm playing with these guys. I'm just a lineman, you know, and blocking and stuff. But I love hitting and playing, and I'm playing with these older guys. And the one guy told me I was in high school, and he told me, hey, how come you're not playing? I couldn't tell him I was scared, and I'm a freshman, and I'm big. I told him, I don't know. He goes, you're scared, aren't you? And I said, yeah. He says, you have padding on, and we play on Sundays without padding. That's crazy. That's stupid. You have padding on and a helmet, and it's not that bad. And I didn't think about that, so I ended up going out for the football team and obviously making it. So my mom finally went to see me play when I was a junior, and I went and played, and I got the wind knocked out of me on a play. And my mom's up there with my sisters and stuff. And sure enough, I got the wind knocked out of me, and I went out for about 30 seconds, a minute. And I'm laying on the field, and she's scared to death. And all I can remember is them telling me, don't move, don't move. So I didn't move. And then I came to, and I didn't move. And they're saying, can you move? And this guy told me not to move. So I said, no, I can't move. So they bring the stretcher out and the ambulance, and they take me out to the side over there in the shack, and I'm going like this. And right before they're taking me in the ambulance and they're poking me with needles and stuff, they're going, can you move? I go, he told me not to. And so I get up and they check me in and everything. And my mom is scared to death. They're already over there praying at the side and the ambulance. And I get up and I come running in. Hey! The guy told me not to move, you know, wow, it even scared me too, because they asked me, can you move? I go, well, he said no, you know, so I didn't move, and I was out, totally out, and so my mom never went again to see me do anything in sports, and I ended up barely graduating from high school, and I had bad grades, and my whole senior year, I was doing drugs and selling drugs for my brother and my cousins on my dad's side of the family. I don't know how I got a hold of some reds and stuff like that. And I even OD'd in school one time. And I barely graduated from high school. And my aunt gave me a car when I was a junior, senior. And me and my dad went and picked it up, a 58 Chevy. And there was no brakes. And we bled the brakes and put a battery in. And it was my car. And I told it out the last day of school because I was already wiped out on wine and reds the night before. And, that was in 71 I graduated. And if you would have told me back then that I had a problem with drinking, I would I don't think so. But I told out of car, you know. And a couple of weeks later, I got my Aunt Rosie, the one that's still alive, we're very close. She got me a job in downtown L.A. at Foremost Ice Creams. It was a very good job. At the time, and yet I was resentful because all my friends were going to Hawaii and Arizona and places like that, and I had to go to work, you know, and I didn't think that was fair, but I went to work, and I ended up getting saved up money because I was working swing shift, and I ended up buying a 64 Impala from an older lady, beautiful car, and at that time, everybody in my neighborhood was lowering everything, and I thought I was a lowrider because the bed I was sleeping on didn't have nothing underneath it. So you know, here I am. Wow, that's cool, you know. Everything was Laura this, Laura that. You know what I even did? My dad had a 63 Impala, beautiful original, and he was already sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I used to clean it and stuff, and I took it down to the muffler shop, and I thought his car would be nicer lowered. So I had the springs heated, just only a little bit. And if you know that you heat the springs in a car, you could lower it a little bit, but it's going to settle lower. So about 3 days later, he goes, "What the hell did you do to my car?" And his 63 Impala's lowered, and he's driving down to our Monday night meeting, and it's real low, and I had to tell him what I did, you know. And anyways, I ended up getting a 64 Impala, and I started pulling hydraulics in it, and just like my car today, it was perfectly clean. It was no spots on it. I was obsessed with this, and I got into a car club, and we were putting cars in car shows and just getting organized with the neighborhood and stuff. And, you know, I was having a lot of fun, and I was living at Mommy and Daddy's house. My dad was sober. My mom was going in Al-Anon. And the only bad thing that they didn't like with me living there was the electricity bill was $300 or $400 at the time, because I had four batteries in my trunk, and every time I would go out, I would charge the batteries with a charger in the house. And it was bad. It was real bad. On Saturday night, I would be charging the batteries, turning the charger on and off, and my mom and dad would be hollering at me because the lights in the living room would go, yeah. And they ended up telling me, I can't do that no more. So what we did, the neighborhood park, one of us got an extension, and we stuck it out through the back. And we started charging our batteries with the city of Santa Fe Springs. I make amends. And I was told to buy pancake breakfasts and stuff, because I told my sponsor, how am I going to make amends? He goes, start buying breakfast, you know, when they have a fundraiser or something. And I said, oh, okay, damn it, you know. And anyways, I ended up partying with, I live off the 605, and on one side's Pico Rivera and the other side's Santa Fe Springs. And there was a women's gang. I mean, these, I didn't know at the time, they looked nice. They were cruising around our neighborhood. They were cruising around our neighborhood, and I hooked up with the craziest one, beautiful lady. I hooked up with the craziest one. We both once in a while would sniff paint. But see, I didn't want to sniff paint because I had that 64 Impala. And you black out for about 20 minutes. But, you know, to be good with her, I would sniff paint, you know. And so I started sniffing paint. And a couple of her friends, make a long story short, married each other. And I didn't even think of marriage. I was having fun partying and going out to car club dances. And, you know, my car was the main thing in my life, you know. And we went to Jack in the Box one time, and we were drunk, and she asked me, let's get married. And I wasn't even thinking of getting married, but my other friends got married. And I thought, hey, yeah, I don't care. Let's go. Let's get married. And I tell you what was about to happen is her family was telling me not to marry her, and my friends and family were telling her not to marry me. And we got married, and it was a very big wedding. And my grand sponsor, Johnny Age, today, was sponsoring my dad at the time. And our wedding was in Lakewood, and it was called the Tahitian Village. If you guys are ever familiar with that neighborhood out there, it was a big, big place. And we had a gigantic wedding. It was unbelievable. And my grand sponsor was there, 78, 77. And he was only there to support my dad, not for me. But you know, I knew he was from AA, and I can remember being across the room, and we're having the toast, and I could see him across, and he's looking at me drinking, and I put the drink down. I caught his eye, and he caught my eye. I knew it. I don't know why. I was scared of that man. I couldn't stand him because he got my dad sober, you know, and which my dad needed to get sober, but I liked my dad drunk at first when he first got sober, and this man got my dad sober, and I didn't like him, you know, and anyways, he left. And right when he was leaving, there was neighborhoods and car clubs there. Somebody got into a fight, and somebody shot a pistol up through the roof, and the police came. Well, when Johnny was leaving, all the police came. And by this time, my brother-in-law is 6'5" and about 300 pounds. Well, he jumped on top of me, just so nothing will happen to me. And they thought I got shot. And so they went out and told him that I got shot. So he came back in, and he was pissed off and left. After he found out I didn't get shot. So, but he remembers that up to this day, my grand sponsor. And I didn't know he was about to be my grand sponsor. And anyways, we stayed married for three or four years. And, you know, I didn't know how to treat this lady. I only knew how to treat her the way I did when I was dating, which was not good. Because I seen the examples my dad did with my mom, which was being macho and stuff like that. And I tell you one incident that really, really made her leave. We were in a car club still, and I had long hair, and I had the nice car and hydraulics and stuff. And I was a hard worker, and she was a hard worker. She worked 8 hours a day, come home and make me a full dinner and tell me she knew about my drinking. Not that it was bad. She would tell me, you're drinking one beer, taking a shower and eating, and you could do whatever you want after that. So I would do that. And she would wash the dishes and put everything away. And I would stay there sometimes or have a couple of beers or somebody would come over. But, you know, I wish that would happen today. But that's not the way it is. I took her for granted. And we were, bless you, I was, we were getting ready to go to a very big dance. And she wanted to hang out with me because she's my wife and stuff. She had her nails done. She had her hair done. And during the day, she kept telling me, how do I look? And I didn't know how to say you look nice. I didn't, never thought about that. And I didn't say nothing. So a couple of times she said that. And finally, we're in the car driving. She's from a women's gang. And she's kind of soft now because she's married to me and stuff. But we're driving to the dance. And finally, she goes, this is your last chance. How does my hair look? And I had a beanie on the back of my seat in case my car broke that I would put on my hair so my hair wouldn't get dirty and I could fix the hydraulics. I got that beanie and I threw it on her lap and I said, here, put this on. And you know what? For 2 or 3 seconds, I knew something was wrong. I knew it. And I'm driving down the street and with my Ray-Bans on, cruising, I knew something was wrong. Didn't know how to say I'm sorry. She just went across and went, blam! She cut me in, gave me a black eye, and she started crying. Why can't you just say you love me? Why can't you just say I look nice once? What happened to you? We got married and you turned into an animal. And a month later, she left, obviously. And the macho guy I am, I helped her. I helped her move back into her mom's house. And I tell you what, we thrashed that apartment. I had parties there selling drugs. And I was driving for an oil company. And I was stealing oil from the oil company. And my dad was buying it. He's a crook. Just because you're sober in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't mean everything's nice and you're following God's will. And I tell you what scared me. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the first things I heard was, what do you get when you sober up a horse thief? You get a sober horse thief. And I thought, oh, man, I didn't steal horses, but I'm doomed, you know, and because I wasn't really a nice guy out there. And anyways, I ended up, everything started crashing in on me. Drunk drivings, drunk in public. I got fired from that job for stealing oil. And the only place I could go was mommy and daddy's house. And that was a bad place for me to go because my mom was in Al-Anon and my dad. I think my mom had 2 years more than my dad. So by the time I got sober, my mom was 18 years in Al-Anon. My dad was 16 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went in and out of that house with a requirement of not to drink. And went to jail a lot, got locked up a lot. And, you know, I went to, got sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. And I had a stack of cards this big that you guys gave me that when I needed help to call. And I had a big stack of cards. And by the time I needed help, I got that one card up. And I was living at my mom and dad's house, walking distance to a job I had because I couldn't drive no more. And I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I got that first card, and I called up this man that had an electronics business in Whittier. And I called him up and told him, I can't do this no more. Can you help me? And it was one of my dad's friends. And I went over there to his work, and he opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm only saying this because this is a spiritual program. But his nickname was Mal the Jew, and he was Jewish. And he opened up the big book and started talking to me about God. And I almost wanted to say, don't they call you Mal the Jew? And here you tell me about, you know, but I didn't say nothing. I was very foggy and messed up. And, you know, he opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and he 12-stepped me. And he asked me about God. And I tell you what this man did. He laughed at me a couple of times. And I didn't like that. But you know what? When you're a newcomer, you see a lot of crazy things. I have made my sponsor today laugh a lot, you know. And I don't do that to the new guys, but I, you know, my sponsor laughs a lot at me, even today. So, anyways, he brought me to the Monday night meeting, the Bellflower Big Book Group. And there I met my sponsor, Ray. He's my sponsor today. I've had him for 28 years, one day at a time. And this man put me to work fast, started giving me a mop and a broom and stuff. And I had 30 days of sobriety, and he told me, get that mop. And I told him, didn't you just see what I did? And it was after the meeting. I just took a 30-day chip. I thought everybody was going to, you know, go like that to me. He goes, what did you do? He goes, I got a 30-day chip. He goes, get your ass over there and go get that goddamn broom. He cusses a lot. He goes, go get that goddamn broom and shut up or else you're going to get drunk. And I went, wow. And I went over and I got that broom and started doing stuff like that. And all through my sobriety, he's even taught me that, you know why we take cakes is because we don't drink. Once we put conditions on our sobriety, probably nobody in here is going to take a cake. Because, you know, we take cakes, we're not drinking. Period. And I've been brought up like that. And today it's kind of different sometimes. But sobriety, physical sobriety, is why we take cakes. And my whole sobriety, he's been hitting me and telling me about sobriety. Don't drink. Don't drink. Don't do that or you're going to drink. Don't do that, you're going to drink. Just knocked it into my head. And so far, one day at a time, has been working for 10,415 days, one day at a time. And I'm really grateful for that. And so is my family. As you know, I was able to make amends to my mom and dad, and that was very tough and painful, man. My mother and my mother-in-law and my ex-wife was the worstest one, I tell you what. But it was the biggest payola of them all. I was a year and a half, and she had sent, it was my belly button birthday, and she sent the kid down the street to give me a birthday card. A year and a half after I got sober, and she wrote, I know it's your belly button birthday, I know it's your birthday, and I always think about you and the time we had when we were married, and I wish it could be the same, but it's not. Thank you. And I closed up that card, and I went and told my sponsor, that was a big mistake. I told him, you know what this, I cussed, you know what this lady did? She gave me a birthday card. And he goes, good. What you do, you contact her and meet her someplace and make amends to her. I said, for what? You know, and make a long story short, I did. And I'll tell you what, it was at a coffee shop. Her mother, her sister were outside the coffee shop in the window watching us. Watching us. And I'll tell you what, this lady, after I made amends to her, offered me a car. She wanted to get back together with me, didn't understand what this was all about. She said, what happened to you? And I said, I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have a God in my life, and I have friends, and I'm going to meetings. She was working for the North American Bank of East L.A. or something. She had a very good job and offered me a car and everything, trying to bribe me. And I said, I don't think so. I don't want to live that way anymore. And I treated you so bad that I don't even want to tell nobody about it. You know, I'm sorry. You know, and years later, I want to tell you something. She called and got a hold of me, and she said she needed help. But 10 years later, and she had a picture of me. I had real long hair in women's lingerie. We would do that once in a while. She always showed it to me, and she used to tempt me about it. You know, like, I'm going to show this to your mom. I'm going to do this before I got sober. So she asked me for help. And I said, you know what? I can't help you, but here are some women's phone numbers. I gave her my sponsor's phone number at the time, his wife's phone number, and a couple other people. And I had to tell my sponsor. I said, come here. She called and she wanted help. I go, I used to put on women's lingerie, and she has a picture of me. What if she comes to the Monday night meetings, goes like this to everybody, you know? And he couldn't stop laughing. He says, you know what? I want to see it too. He goes, but you know what? She's probably not going to even call. She's probably just to bug you a little bit, just to make sure you know she's there. And you know what? She didn't call. So, whew, you know, and, but it was just something out of the past that creeped up, and it was just, I'm a Dennis Rodman fan, so I say some people like that, you know. I'm okay with it. Anyways, I ended up making amends to my family and friends, and little did I know that my mom and dad would get sick. And I moved back into the house, and my dad, 15 years ago, died of cancer. And we became friends after I made amends to him, paid him back his money. We were one drunk talking to another, and I'll tell you a little story. When I was a kid, he told me he was at the invasion of Normandy. He was in the army, and he told me he was there the second day. And I didn't know at that time, but there's nobody alive just about that was there the second day. Everybody got killed. So right before he passed away, he told me, and we were sitting down talking about it, and he told me, I was there the 12th day of the invasion of Normandy. And I said, wait a goddamn minute. You told me a long time ago you were there the second day. He had a smile from ear to ear. And we became friends and stuff like that. It was tough losing him. But I tell you what, the toughest was my mom. I was told to take her to dinner once a week. I did for 2 years. And I'll tell you what, right before she died, 2 months before she died, some of you that have family and in your living and stuff, you're supposed to say, is there anything I could do? Please let me do it. And I'll tell you what happened to my dad before he died. One day he came home and I was uptight. They're dying. He's dying. And he told me, can you go pick up my prescriptions at the pharmacy before you go to your meeting? And I took a big huff and a puff and went, oh, shit. And my dad chewed me out from one side to the other and told me, I also want you to go to your goddamn AA meeting and tell them what happened here. That this shit that you say, oh, I'll do anything. You want me to do anything, let me know. And look at the attitude you have. And you know what? That was a big slap in the face. So I'll tell you what, by the time my mom, he passed away, I took care of my mom like she was the queen. Which she was the queen. And we did everything together. We even went to a convention and shared a room. I mean, where would you do that? She went to Ellen and I went to AA. And it was tough. But I got through it sober by talking to other people and stuff. And my life is good today. It's unbelievable. I mean, I have friends like Jeanette. We've never really argued real bad or anything. But, I mean, I don't agree with her. I'm sure she don't agree with me. But I have some women friends and I have men friends that are the same thing, you know. And the only bad thing is I still have my grand sponsor, Johnny. He's mean to me still, you know. And he's mean to everybody. But he watches out for me. But my life is real good today. I had a couple of birds, and I had to give one of them away. One of them died. That was one of the most painful things is when your pets die. And I had this bird, Ozzy, for 10 years, and he was dead on the bottom of the cage. I was going to work. Nah, why me? What the heck happened? You know, and he got sick. Well, I had this bird, Nacho, after that for 3 years, and he started getting sick. And I thought, I'm not going to go through this again. So I took him to go get it checked, and I left him at where I got him from, and I couldn't do this again. So right now I have a betta fish. His name's Dude. And he's real quiet. And I'm not kidding you. I hit the side of the bowl, and he comes right to me, man. And he looks like a little helicopter going like that, you know. And I need something like that at home. And I'm real comfortable at my place. And I've been at the same job 27 years. I'm a very good employee, and I wasn't before. I'm pretty damn honest, you know. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous and all you people and working the steps and having a God in my life that I trust. And I'm pretty sure he trusts me. So if you're new, get a sponsor and don't drink. That's the only way this program will work. Thank you.